How many of you remember taking driver's training? Anybody? How many of you never did driver's training? Just raise your hand. Those of you who never did driver's training, some of you I've encountered on the road, you need to take it. We were driving, I think it was yesterday or Friday, and I just couldn't believe how many people. This is not even part of my notes. This happened to me on Thursday night. I was coming home, came to a four-way stop, got to the light, and the guy on the opposite side who's coming through had got there just a fraction of a second after me. And so I thought I'd be nice. I thought I'd be Canadian. And so I just waved him on, and I went like this and waited because I was turning, and I waved him on. And the guy came by, and he gave me the finger. I couldn't believe it. I thought, but this is ridiculous. I don't even know what I did. Maybe there was something else, but I shouldn't have told that story, but it happened to me, and I'm still scarred from it. When I first took driver's training, I thought that I had a decent idea about how to drive a car. My dad let me drive his car this one night. We were in Whitby. He took me to the courthouse, and we used the parking lot late at night when there was no cars there, and got me on the road. I thought I understood it. And this is what I figured. I figured that if you simply kept your eyes focused on the front, if you just looked straight ahead and fixated your eyes on the destiny, paid attention to the lights, paid attention to the cars in front of you, paid attention to where you're going, just fixed your eyes forward, that everything would be fine. Then I took driver's training. And thankfully, I wasn't the first person in our car. We had two other guys in the car with our driving instructor, Norm. And these two other guys had the opportunity to first go driving. And so I'm sitting in the back seat. And I watched, and I'm just paying attention to what's ahead. And my driver instructor began to say things like, check your blind spot. Check your blind spot. And the person would look over to their side. And then there would be times he'd say, hey, look in your mirror. Look what's behind you. Pay attention to the cars that are coming up behind you. And so the driver would look in the mirror and see what was behind. And then we'd say, now look forward. And so there were moments that you had to look forward. And there were moments that you had to look to the left or to the right. And then there were moments you looked in your mirror and you looked backwards. And every one of those moments mattered. And there were a few moments when the driver didn't do what they were supposed to do, didn't look at the right spot, or didn't check their blind spot, was about to make a turn because they saw what was ahead, and the driver instructor had his own steering wheel and his own set of brakes and gas pedals, and he would immediately take control. He's like, you missed checking your blind spot. And my heart's pounding, thinking I'm going to give up my life at this moment because of these crazy drivers that I'm with. But I learned in those moments that there are times you've got to look forward, and then there are moments you've got to look to the side, and then there are moments you've got to look in your mirror and look backwards. And friends, I think the same is true when it comes to our lives. I think that while our lives are going forward, and while every one of you needs to make sure that you're going forward with your life, that you aren't stationary, you aren't going to the side, and you definitely aren't going backward. We're moving forward. While we're moving forward, there are times our eyes have to be forward, and then there are times that our eyes have to be to the left or to the right, and then there are times that our eyes need to look in the rearview mirror to see what's behind us. And while many of you have heard many messages about never looking back, I actually think that one of the best ways to move forward in our lives is sometimes looking backwards. There are moments where you have to look back in order to see some things, to fix your eyes on what's behind you in order to properly move forward. And so I want to talk to you about that in this series as we begin today. The series is called Fix Your Eyes, and I want to talk to you about looking backwards. And so I want you to look at the screen to Deuteronomy chapter 8, and we're going to read verses 1 to 3, and then verses 8, I believe it's verses 8 to, or 10 to 18. It says, be careful to follow every command I am giving you today, so that you may live and increase and may enter and possess the land the Lord promised on oath to your ancestors. Remember how the Lord your God led you all the way to the wilderness these 40 years, to humble and to test you in order to know what was in your heart, whether or not you would keep his commands. He humbled you, causing you to hunger, and then feeding you with manna, which neither you nor your ancestors had known, to teach you that man does not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of God. And when you had eaten and are satisfied, praise the Lord your God for the good land he has given you. Be careful that you do not forget the Lord your God, failing to observe his commands, his laws, and his decrees that I am giving you this day. Otherwise, when you eat and are satisfied, when you build fine houses and settle down, and when your herds and flocks grow large, and your silver and gold increase, and all you have is multiplied, then your heart will become proud, and you will forget the Lord your God, who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. He led you through the vast and dreadful wilderness, that thirsty and waterless land, with its venomous snakes and scorpions. He brought you water out of the hard rock. He gave you manna to eat in the wilderness, something your ancestors had never known, to humble and test you, so that in the end it might go well with you. You may say to yourself, my power and the strength of my hands have produced this wealth for me, but remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you the ability to produce wealth, and so confirms his covenant, which he swore to your ancestors as it is today. The story is taking place with Moses and the Israelites. Moses has been their leader, and he is getting the people ready to go forward, to go into the place of their destiny, the promised land. But Moses understands that if the people of Israel are to get to the place that God's taken them, if they are to truly move forward into their destiny, their promised land, that there are moments that we have to look backwards. There are moments we have to remember. There are moments we have to fix our eyes on something that's behind us. And Moses begins to communicate about some things that he believes the children of Israel have got to remember, some things that they need to put their eyes on that are behind them. The first thing that he wants them to remember, the first thing he wants them to look back at, is how God has led you. Remember how God has led you. At the very beginning, it says, remember how the Lord has led you. Remember how the Lord has led you. Friends, I want to tell you something. It's important not just to know where you're at, but it's important to know how God has led you to where you're at. To pay attention to the path that he's taken you in. And he's saying, hey, Israelites, I want you to remember how the Lord has led you. You once were in Egypt, but now you are in the spot that is just the prelude to the promised land. You're in the entry spot, the starting gate to going into the promised land. But I want you to know that while your eyes are focused on the destiny, while your eyes are focused on that which is just on the other side, I want you to remember how the Lord has led you. Look back. Look back to how he's led you. And then he begins to talk about how God has led. About how they got here. About how they have found themselves in the spots that they are in. And verse 3, he says that God led them by trying to humble them. He caused them to be hungry, to be in want. He then fed them, and then he taught them the importance of a God dependence. Friends, he is referring back to their journey about this process between Egypt and the promised land. The how God leads. And it's mostly referring to a time that some of the language he's using is referring to a time when the children of Israel had been in the desert of Sin. And they are wandering through the desert, and they are super thirsty. I mean, it's a deserted place. There's no vegetation because of the heat. And they are dehydrated. They are in desperate need of water. And they leave there, and they are complaining that there's no water. And they get to a place called Marah. And when they get to Marah, there's no water except for this bitter water. And as they go to taste it, at first they're super excited. They go to take a little drink from the water, but it's so bitter that they can't drink it. It's not going to quench their thirst. And God steps in supernaturally, and Moses puts a stick in the water and changes the compensation of this water, removes the bitterness in a supernatural way, and then calls the Israelites to drink of this fresh, life-giving water. I mean, 3 days. 3 days they had been in the wilderness. 3 days that they had been thirsty. 3 days they had been without. I mean, they had come to this place where they were out of Egypt, and they had enough food, enough water, enough drink to carry them for a good amount of days. But they came to a place where now every container's dry, and they just need water. And they go through this season where God doesn't give them the water right away. Until 3 days later, and he supernaturally steps in. And then they find themselves in the desert of Shur. And they're in this place, and they are now hungry. And they're they're in a place where they've already tasted the water, but now they need food, and they're not thirsty anymore, but they're grumbling in their stomach. There's these sounds, and the juices are going, and it's the way some of you are at 11:45. It's just this moment where all you can think about, you're just waiting for me to finish the message so that you can go to Swiss Chalet and eat. And here they are, they're wandering through the desert, and they have no food, and they're complaining again. And then God steps in, and in a miraculous way, manna, this food we don't even understand, comes down from the sky and is there for them. It seems to be the way that God leads us. And this is what Moses is saying. He says, I want you to remember these moments. I want you to remember the desert of sin. And I want you to remember Mara. I want you to remember the desert of Shur. I want you to remember the desert moments. Because this is how God leads us, friends. He brings us to a place where we have a need. A place where there's something, there's a lack. And you can see it on the screen. He either creates it or he allows a lack. Some of you are in a spot like that today. You have a lack, some insufficiency in your life, something that needs God's provision. And God allows or He creates this lack. And it's okay on day one. We feel it a tiny bit. We recognize it. But day one's fine. But you get to day two in the desert of sin. You get to day two in the desert of Shur. And you begin to wonder where God's at. And you're wondering whether or not God's leading you at all. You wonder whether or not He's hearing your prayers, whether or not He cares about you, whether or not He's walking with you, and He is who He says He is. You're in day two, and then you get to day three, and you're ticked off with God. Anybody ever been there? You liars, all of you. We've all been there. Get to day three, and day one was fine, day two was hard, but day three is difficult. It's incredibly difficult because we are thirsty, we are hungry, and it says that He allows us to feel the lack. Have you ever felt the lack? Not just known it, but felt it? I mean, physically felt it? I mean, there's one thing for me to go, hey, I need a drink of water. I recognize my mouth's getting dry as I'm talking, so I'll take a little sip. And then there's moments where I haven't had water the entire day and my body's craving it. I'm thirsty. I feel it. And here they are 3 days in. They're thirsty. They're craving it. And they're all they can think about. They're consumed by it. They feel the lack. This is how God's leading them. He brings them out of Egypt where they have everything. They're in the desert of sin. They have no water. Then they get to the desert of Shur. They have no food. And day one's difficult. Day two's more difficult. But day three, they're feeling it. They're feeling it. And they're going, God, where are you? Where are you? And then you know what? All of a sudden, when they feel it the most, when they feel like they can't go on another step, He steps in and shows them who He is. He provides at the moment of necessity. He's not going to kill them. He didn't bring them out of Egypt to kill them. And friends, I want to tell you that there's this process in our lives, how God leads us. If you will look back on your life, if you will take a look in the rearview mirror of where you've come from, the Egypt that you had once been in and where you're at today, if you look at the process, you would realize that there are these moments in our lives where God takes us through this journey and He creates or He allows an insufficiency in our lives. Maybe it's a spiritual moment. Maybe it's an emotional moment. Maybe it's a mental moment. Maybe it's a social moment. Maybe it's a physical moment. Maybe it's a financial moment. And we feel the need. We know the need. It's in our head. We go, we need something. And day one passes. And then there's day two, and we're crying out to God, and it feels like the heavens are brass. It feels like He can't hear us, and we keep crying out. And then we get to day three, and we're frustrated with God, and we don't understand where He's at. We just don't get it, and we're crying out and crying out, and we're at the place where we feel it. Like, God, if You don't step in, we're going to die. And God's standing in heaven, and He's looking down going, you're not going to die. You're fine. You just feel it now. You just feel it. And at the moment when we need it the most, at the moment when it is a necessity, where it's urgent, it's the 11th hour, God steps in and goes, okay, let me give you some water. Let me give you some food. You know why He does that? Because He wants you to be dependent upon Him. You see, He wants you to be dependent upon Him. Because friends, if you will look back in the rearview mirror and fix your eyes on how He's led you, you will find over and over and over again in the situations in your life that He keeps leading you to a place where you will be dependent upon Him. Your journey is a story of stories. Your journey is a series of moments where God took you through some desert moments to get you to be dependent upon Him. But you know what we want? That's not the process that we want. We want God to give us abundance so there's never a need. And there's all kinds of preachers, you can find them all over the internet and all over TV, who will talk about how God will just give you abundance and abundance and abundance and abundance so that you never have a need. Or we want God to never allow there to be a situation where we have some kind of need in our lives. The problem is when we live like that, we don't have a dependence upon Him. When we live like that, we are more dependent upon what we have than on the God that we serve. And so we want this excess, this removing of needs, or we want Him to provide for the need before we feel it. You know, the bill comes in and our mind goes, hey, I have a need. God, I don't feel it yet. It's due at the end of the month, and so I need You to provide today. Anybody been there? You want, as soon as the need's there, you want God to step in and provide right away. And for some strange reason, He doesn't provide on day one, day two, day three. He takes us till the end of the month. And we're near the end of the calendar, and we go, God, the bill that I recognized was a need at the beginning is now a reality. It feels urgent. I feel it. If I don't have the money, I'm not going to be able to pay this bill. And God goes, okay, now let Me step in. Because He wants you to be dependent upon Him. He wants you to live your life in full dependency upon Him. If you're going to move forward, you've got to keep looking in your rearview mirror at how He's led you. He has always led you to be dependent upon Him because that's the way He wants you to move forward. Think of that story where Jesus gathers the disciples and there's this large crowd and there's like 5,000 men and a bunch of ladies and some kids. He's like, hey, boys, these guys are hungry. I've been preaching for a long time. I mean, I've been preaching. You guys think I preach long with 42 minutes, but I mean, Jesus is preaching hours. And He's preaching hours and hours and hours. And He goes, guys, listen, the crowd's getting hungry. And I know the area pretty well. And all the restaurants are closed up. And there's no way they're going to be able to get to the places they need to for food. Why don't we feed them? The disciples are there like, Jesus, all we got, few fish and a few loaves of bread. Yep, let's do it. Now, friends, I know the moment because Jesus is supposed to be the center of the situations, and we say that. Jesus is the center of the situations, but I got to tell you that I can relate to the disciples because it's not Jesus who's handing out the baskets. It's not Jesus who's going to the people and He's watching to see how much they take and ready for the embarrassing moment. Jesus is just the one praying. Jesus is the one telling them what to do. And there are times in my life I feel like that. I feel like Jesus is the one who's interceding on my behalf, and He's the one telling me what to do. But I've got the basket in my hands, and I have to start thinking up excuses when there's not enough food. You know what I'm saying? Where God tells you to do something, and you're living in a certain way, and you've got the basket, and God's told you to do something that seems so crazy. He's leading you in this direction, and the disciples are there with the basket, and they're the ministry managers, they're the pastors of the crowd, and they've got to be thinking, what excuses are we going to come up with? Well, listen, it was just a kid's lunch. He didn't have very many big fish because he's just a kid. You know, if we had have had like a young adult's lunch, everything would have been fine. If we had a rich man's lunch, we would have been fine. But just the boys, I'm sorry. You know, Jesus didn't really have to serve you in the first place. He's just trying to create a communion moment. Well, you know, some of you eat a lot of food. And so that's the reason why we ran out. I'm sure there's this major stress on their life. Because they're starting to feel it. They've got their basket. They look at their section. This is the section I'm required to feed, Jesus. You're leading me to feed this group? Ugh. And they walk over. And in their mind, they know it's not a whole lot. And they're starting to feel it. You want me to, okay, I'll apologize by the time I get to row 3. And they begin to pass it out. And each row, the basket's passed. And by the time they get to the back, there's not a lack because God steps in again. And the reason why he has created this moment is not to feed the crowd, but he's trying to lead his disciples in a journey, in a moment that will teach them about the importance of leaning on God. And friends, I want to tell you that we can't learn that lesson enough. That we can't learn the lesson enough that God will create, or he will allow insufficient moments in our lives that we will acknowledge in a cognizant way, and then he will give us some days where we will feel it, some days of walking through the desert, some days where it moves from here to here, from here to here, where we can taste it, we're thirsty for water, or we're hungry for food, and we go, God, where are you? And he is leading us to a place of dependency on him. He's leading us. And I think that when Moses said to the Israelites for them to remember how the Lord had led them, that he was saying to them, I want you to look in your rearview mirror. I want you to fix your eyes behind you. Because if you're going to go forward, you're going to need to understand the importance of leaning on God. You're going to need to understand the importance of depending on God. And friends, please listen to me. If you go back in your life and you remember those moments where there was deep hunger, deep thirst, deep lack, if you go back and you look to those, you will learn, you will remember that what he led you through was a lesson in dependency upon him. And it's the same lesson that he wants you to hold on to as you move forward. Everything you're about to face, you are prepared for it because of what you already faced. Everything that you've, if you will look back, everything you've learned, the things he's tried to teach you, you will be ready for the future. But if you didn't learn the lesson in the past, you'll have a hard time going forward. We've got to look in our rearview mirror about how he's led us. The second thing I think that Moses tries to teach them is to remember what he said. Verse 11 says, be careful that you do not forget the Lord your God, failing to observe his commands. Moses doesn't just say, hey, I want you to remember what he's led you through. He says, I want you to remember what he said. I want you to remember the things that God's spoken to you. I want you to remember every instruction, every statute, every judgment. I want you to remember the things that he said to you. And at the end of this chapter, Moses actually says, hey, this is what's going to happen. If you don't remember the things he said to you, it's not going to go so well. And let me pause here just for a second, friends. This is so vital. Because there are moments in our lives when we face difficulties and challenges, and we're trying to move forward in our lives, and we can't understand why there's a big hole in the road. And the reason is because God has given us some instructions behind. He has already told us some things for our lives that we fail to remember, and we've simply gone our own route and found ourselves in difficult situations. And at the end of this chapter, chapter 8, verses 19 to 20, let's look at the screen. He says, if you forget the Lord your God and follow other gods and worship and bow down to them, I testify against you today that you'll surely be destroyed. Like the nations the Lord destroyed before you, so you'll be destroyed for not obeying the Lord your God. Hey Israelites, if you want to move forward, you've got to remember the things he said to you. You've got to pay attention. Because sometimes the things that he said to you in the past are instructions for tomorrow. They're for down the road. They're for things that you need to do. They're for the things that will lead you to life. And if you forget, you'll find yourself in a place that doesn't have life. And I love it. Moses talks about the things that God said. He says God's given you statutes. These statutes are the way God wants things to be. Friends, it doesn't matter what you want for your life. I mean, it matters. But there are statutes that God has over your life. The things that he says, this is the way I want things to be for your life. This is what I want for you. This is what I want for your family. This is what I want for your finances. This is what I want for your dreams. This is what I want for your home. These are the things I speak over you, statutes, my statutes, the way things should be. And then there are judgments. And these are decisions that he's made, not just legal rulings, but decisions he's made for your life, that he's determined, this is what I have determined ahead of time, judgments that he's made. And then he gives these commands. These are the things that he's told us to grab hold of, the things that we must do, the things that we must act upon. The problem is that many times we forget the things that God said to us. And when we don't when we just keep moving forward and we forget to look back to the things that he said to us, we find ourselves doing the things that are contrary to what he's spoken. The story of Ai. The children of Israel have crossed over the Jordan. They find themselves at Jericho. They're going to take down this great city that is incredibly fortified, that has walls that are so thick, chariots can race on top of it. I mean, just it's absolutely astounding how big the city is. And I've shared this before. You know, they just got some lanterns and a few jazz instruments, and they're just going to march and have a Louis Armstrong moment, and the trumpets are going to blare, and the walls are going to come down. But here's the thing, is that God says, hey, I do have some instructions for you, but it's not as simple as just a little jazz concert. The instruction is when you go in and the walls come down, I want you to destroy everything. I want you, don't take a thing. Here's my words, just don't take a thing. Destroy it all. This is the enemy stuff. I'm going to give you great fortunes in the future. I'm taking you to the promised land where you'll never be without. Just destroy it all. The word of the Lord, the command. And so the walls come down, the Israelites are going all through from home to home, and they're killing people and pillaging and destroying everything like they're supposed to. And there's this man by the name of Achan, and Achan comes into this one place and he kills the people, and as he looks around the bedroom, he sees this robe that would look so nice on him. I mean, he looks at the little tag in the collar, and it's his size. I mean, it would fit him so well. It's designer stuff. It's incredibly nice. And it, as he looks down the floor, there's like 200 pieces of silver shekels. And then there's a bar of gold. And Achan thinks to himself, if I could just kind of keep this stuff, I won't let anybody know for a while. I'm just going to hide it in my tent. I'll just dig a hole in my tent. I'll hide it there. And then when we get into the promised land, I'll have a jump start in everybody else. I'll be able to start my own business. I'll be able to have a little bit of dignity. I mean, everybody's going to be trying to get some new clothes. I already have some new clothes. I'll get a jump start on everybody else. And so I don't know how he does it, whether he sticks it up his shirt and just kind of, you guys saw the news article about the lady who tried to get on a plane this week. She put all her luggage stuff underneath her shirt, pretending that she was pregnant. It's kind of one of those moments. They caught her, by the way. Anyways, maybe he sticks it all underneath his shirt, and he's like pretending that he's, you know, he's a bigger man, and he goes back to his tent and he digs a hole and he hides it because he's forgotten what God has said. He's forgot to look back at what God has told them to do. He's simply living in the future. He's simply looking towards how things could be for him in the forward motion, in the future when in the promised land. He's looking forward, but he forgets to look back to what God has said. Now they've destroyed Jericho, things, they're having a party, they're just living it up, things are going really well. They are the league favorites to win it all. And now God said, now they're going to go take on Ai. And they set up this battle, and Joshua's like, we don't need to send very many people. Sends a few hundred men out, and 36 people get killed because of something in the camp. Joshua doesn't know what it is, and when he finds out they got defeated by this little army, he's super upset, and he starts to whine and complain by God, and he's on the ground, and God finally speaks to him and says, Joshua, would you get up for a second? He said, the problem is that somebody forgot what I told them. Somebody didn't do what I told them to do. And because they didn't listen, it paid a consequence on everybody else. Let me pause here for a second. Some of us live our lives with some secret stuff. There are some things that God has spoken to us about. He's told us about. He said, this is the way things should be. This is the way things should not be. This is my command. This is my statute. These are the judgments I made for your life. And I'm telling you, this shouldn't be in your life. And what we do is we ignore God, we don't look back, we don't remember his words, we take what doesn't belong, some experience, something, and we put it in our lives, hiding it there, and we think it has no ramifications for everybody else. But friends, I want to tell you that the secret stuff in your life will create a ripple in people around you. You may have gotten away with it for a season, but I'm telling you that if you ignore what God has said, you will allow things into your life that will create a ripple for the people around you. And not only will you not be able to get to the place that God wants for your life, you will actually prevent other people from getting there too, because of secret stuff in your life. And God sets up this whole census moment, and Joshua gets to Achan's tent, and he finds out that Achan had disobeyed God. He had not paid attention to what God had said to him. And it seems so harsh, and I'm not going to spend much time here, but it's one of these moments in Scripture that many people have a hard time with, because he kills Achan and his wife and his kids and destroys the entire tent. And the reason basically is this, is he wants the children of Israel to know that it is absolutely unacceptable for any group of people to ignore the things that God has said to you. Listen to me for a second. The Word of God, this book right here, this isn't God's suggestion book. This isn't, hey, I got some advice for you, and if this doesn't work, listen to Oprah. This isn't just a book of common ideas, some good wisdom, another leadership book that you can put into your life. Friends, this is the stuff that will either take us forward or leave us where we're at, either bring us into life or bring us to destruction. And when we forget the things and we stop paying attention to the things the Word says, when we don't look back into the instructions that God has given to us, I guarantee you, you will never get to the places that He wants for you. Now let me, and I'm not trying to put a big heavy, but it's hard to look into the things that God has said in the Word when we don't get into the Word. And statistics tell me that the majority of the church does not read on a regular basis or listen to the Word of God. And friends, I'm not trying to judge you. I'm encouraging you to get into a Bible reading plan, because you need to know the things that He said, because you can't look back on what He said if you don't hear it in the first place. And so Achan brings trouble to the children of Israel. You see, we've got to keep looking back to the things that God has said. God's words are like a code of conduct. They direct our path forward. But not only are God's words a code of conduct, they also communicate His character. This is so important. You see, sometimes we've got to look back at the words that He said, the things that He's spoken, and fix your eyes on that so that we know how to go. The code of conduct, how we're supposed to live our lives, how we're supposed to move forward. But sometimes we look back simply to see the character of God. Simply to see who He is. Two little girls are hanging out in their bedroom this one day, and they brought their money with them, and they said, "Let's count our pennies." And the first girl starts counting in front of the other one, and she, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and she right away raises her hand. She said, "I've got 5 pennies. The other little girl goes, "Yeah, I've got 10 pennies. The first girl goes, I don't believe you. And she says, "Look, I've got 10 pennies. And the little girl counts. She says, "There's only 5 there. And she says, "Yes, there's only 5 here, but my dad promised me that he would give me 5 more pennies when he got home. So I've got 10. She's in a spot where she's only got physically 5, but she so believes the character of her dad that she's willing to claim that she's got the 10. And I was thinking about this story when I read it. I thought, you know, the dad in the story, if he knew he was going to give the daughter 5 more pennies, he could have done it at the moment of promise. He could have, you know, the moment where he promised her that he would give her 5 more pennies, he could have given her the 5 pennies at that moment. But why did he wait till the end of the day? Because there are times that God just wants to communicate His character. A dad wants to communicate their character. "Sweetheart, I'm going to give you 5 pennies at the end of the day. I'm communicating that you can trust me, that I am faithful, that I am loving, that I am kind." And there are moments that God will make promises over your life. Please listen to me. There are moments that God has made promises over your life, and they're not just things to direct you into the future. They are things that God is saying over you to express His character. And you see, if He's made a promise to you, He's going to fulfill it. If He's told you that this is what He has for your life, if He's told you this is where the future is going, then He is faithful. And it may not be, you may be in the 2:00 in the afternoon moment and dad doesn't get home until 5:30, but God has spoken something to you to communicate His character, that He's faithful, that He's good, that He's kind, that He's loving, that He is with you. And there are moments you have to look back on the things that God's spoken to you to reveal the character of God in your life.
Friends, this is so important. Some of you, you're in a difficult situation. You're in the 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and you feel like God's promised you, and you're questioning, and you're telling God, just get away, and you can't move forward. God seems so mean. Just, God, get away. But God's saying, would you look back at the things I've promised you? Because when you look back at what I said, I communicate my character to you, and I want you to know my character doesn't change. And you need to hold on to the character of God. And so God wants us to remember how he's led us. He wants us to remember the things that he said. And lastly, he wants us to remember what he's done. Remember what he did. Remember what he did. In verses 15 to 18, we read about some of the incredible things that God did for the children of Israel. He led them through the desert. I mean, they don't have GPS signals. They don't have the app Waze. They're in the wilderness. They're in the desert. In this vast space of sand. And God leads them. It's incredible. He's their GPS. He protects them from snakes and scorpions. I don't like snakes at all. I sure don't like scorpions. And they're everywhere. And the probability of them not getting bitten by a snake or not getting bitten by a scorpion is so, it's so ridiculous. I mean, somebody should have got bitten. But God protects them. He protects them from all that. And then we find out that he allows them to get water from rocks. From rocks. I mean, friends, if I went home and said, Ainsley, can you give me some water? And she came to me and just put a rock down in front of me. We'd have a conversation. But what is this about? But God has the ability to get water from rocks. Then he provides manna from the sky. I mean, don't go to Swiss Chalet. Just look up in the sky and wait for the pita to come down. That's God. Then it says that he gave them the ability to produce. And then it says that he confirms his covenant. God steps in and he keeps showing them what he's done. And Moses says, I want you to look back at the things that God's done. Now, on your journey, I want you to look back at everything he's done. I want you to look back to every miracle and every supernatural moment and every natural moment where it was impossible for God for anything to happen, and God stepped in and he provided. I want you to look back and see what he's done. See what he's done. There's this great story in Joshua chapter 4, and I want to read it very quickly. It says, when the whole nation had finished crossing the Jordan, the Lord said to Joshua, choose 12 men from among the people, one from each tribe, and tell them to take up 12 stones from the middle of the Jordan, from right where the priests are standing, and carry them over with you and put them down at the place where you stay tonight. So Joshua called together the 12 men and he had appointed from the Israelites, one from each tribe, and said to them, go over before the ark of the Lord your God into the middle of the Jordan. Each of you is to take up a stone on his shoulder according to the number of tribes of Israel, to serve as a sign among you. In the future, when your children ask, what do these stones mean? Tell them that the flow of the Jordan was cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. When it crossed the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. These stones are to be a memorial to the people of Israel forever. Joshua is creating something, a memorial that will always cause the Israelites to look back. That will always cause the Israelites to fix their eyes backwards. To have them look back on something that God did. So that when they come to this place where they see these rocks, these 12 giant rocks, the kids are out playing and they see this mound of rocks and they go, hey, Dad, what's that about? Guys, come here for a second. These rocks, they represent something from the past. And sometimes we just need, if we're going to move forward, we gotta look backwards and we gotta remember. This reminds me of what God did. You see, we were about to cross over into the promised land, but we had to cross the raging Jordan River. And we looked and we couldn't figure it out. We were thinking about making rafts, but we didn't have any wood, so that wasn't a good idea. And we just didn't know how to get to the other side. And God just had this idea that like put the Ark of the Covenant in the water, and the priests moved ahead of us. And as they stepped in the water spread, and the ground was dry, which is impossible. And this memorial helps us remember the God who helped us walk through the dry Jordan. Oh, kids, it was incredible what God did. Oh, that reminds me of another moment about what God did. It reminds me of the moment we were in the desert of sin and we were so thirsty. And we got to Marah and the water was terrible, but Moses threw his stick in. Oh, it reminds me of that. Oh, it reminds me of another thing that God did. And the memorial kept drawing their eyes back to those impossibles, those moments that God showed off, those moments that God stepped in and provided. Friends, I want to tell you that in the moments in your life where God steps in and provides you with the natural or the supernatural, you need to do something to etch it in your mind so that some point in the future you can point back and say it to your kids and your grandkids and to your friends, this is what God has done. That there would be something in your life that you'd go, hey, this reminds me of God's provision, so I'm going to just put this up here so that I would remember. And then God does another thing. He provides some financial need, and you go, I'm just never going to forget that. I'm going to put that there as a memorial for Him. And then He does another thing, and there's a situation in your workplace, and you go, how's God going to take care of that? But He steps in, and you get another memorial rock. And then there's a challenge in your health. How's God ever going to step in? How's He ever going to take care of this? And then God does something that just blows you away. I'll never forget it. And you put another rock. And then there's a difficulty with your neighbors. And there's a situation, and you don't know, you don't have the conflict skill to deal with it. God steps in, another rock. And day after day, He just shows up and provides. And you just have this little pile of rocks that just represent all that God has done. And there are moments as you're going through life's journeys where you have to look back to the rock moments, the memorials, where you're standing in the place in your own Jordan River where it seems impossible. And God says, hey, I want you to look not just at how I led you, but I want you to look at who I am. I want you to look at who I am in your life. I'm the God who has always been able to deal with the Jordan Rivers. I'm the God who's always been able to deal with the Jordan Rivers, and I'll deal with your Jordan River. I look back in my life, oh, what does this rock represent? It represents those moments when I was a kid, when we didn't have food, and I didn't know what we were going to eat that week, and I've told some of these stories, but there'd be a buzz at our apartment buzzer, and some person in our church heard from God, stepped in and provided baskets of groceries for us. And in the moments when I don't have very much or I face a financial crisis, I remember those moments. I look back at the rock. This rock, it represents when I was 2.5, when we were living in Montreal, and I'm playing on the road with this Fisher-Price toy, and it goes out into the parking lot, and I bend down, and there's a lady who's driving this car, and she doesn't see me. And friends, she runs over me. The car came over, it wasn't the wheels, obviously, but the car came over me, and my shirt gets caught underneath the muffler system. And the lady is leaving our townhouse complex. And if God wanted to shut my life down, He could have done it that moment. But at that very moment, my mom comes outside for some reason. And she sees what's taking place, and in the horrific of what she's seeing, she begins to chase this car yelling, and the lady stops. And sure, I had to spend a couple days in the hospital. Had some skin torn, some clothes ripped, some physical situations. But God preserved my life. He preserved my life, and this rock represents that. This rock right here, it represents when I was a teenager, and I didn't know how I was getting to Bible college. God sent me forward, but I didn't have the money to get there, and I was complaining and trying everything I could do in my own ability, but no job was coming my way. But God spoke to a man in my church and said, give Jeff whatever he needs to get to Bible college. And that doesn't even make sense, but that's God showing up in my life. This rock right here represents how God took the youngest candidate of three people who were being interviewed for a district youth director role, and he made it so that I would be the one chosen, because 2 years beforehand he had promised me something. And as I'm going into an interview with eight district executive members, knowing that the two other candidates have way more experience, it doesn't seem possible that God's able to fulfill the promise for my life. And you see, this one may not matter to you, but it matters to me because God has promised me some things that seem impossible at times. And I look back to this rock, this memorial moment, and when I'm facing a promise that seems so far and so impossible, I go, I was only 26 and he made me youth director because he promised me. And if he's able to do the impossible in that moment, why can't he do the impossible now? That's his promise, and I put this down, and I go, that's my God. How about one more? This is when Briar was born. And for 3 days, I believe it was, because of her blood being different from Ainsley, she was under the lights. I'm not very medical, as you can tell. She was underneath those, what are they called, fluorescent lights or whatever, and we're just like freaked out because we haven't even been able to hold our baby. And finally they say, okay, her jaundice is down, everything's good. We just need to do one more test. And the doctors say to us, there's a hole in her heart about a centimeter long. I've got the paper still in my backpack. Your daughter most likely is going to need to have heart surgery very soon. I mean, Briar's only like a few days old. And friends, I got to tell you that I'm one of those people when there's a possibility that something negative could happen, I go beyond what that possibility is. And I don't know what to do, and I'm gutted, and I'm broken, and all I know what to do is pray. And a month later, we take her to a doctor in Toronto who does some tests. And he's the one who's going to set up the surgery for us. Comes back and he says, I got to tell you, I don't know what they saw a month ago in that hospital. But there is no hole in her heart. There's no hole, and she's not going to need surgery. I remember driving over the bridge in Scarborough and just praising God because he's the God who's able. Friends, he's the God who's able. Get a little emotional with my little girl. I look back to the rock stories about what God has done. And when I look back, it's what propels me to go forward. When I see how he's led me, that he's always caused me to be dependent upon him. When I hear what he said, I know that his words are the best for my life. I know that his promises reveal his character. And sometimes I look back and I see the rocks, and they remind me of what he's done. And I'm standing in a Jordan River moment, and I go, I just look back, and I know that God is with me, and I trust him to dry the Jordan once again. I trust him for that. Pastor Steve, would you come back? Last weekend, we went for a walk on Sunday afternoon. We were tired from GLS and long days. And we're walking through the forest, and we're about halfway through, and Briar says, I don't know where my phone is. It's the last thing a parent wants to hear. I don't know where my phone is. I started asking questions. Well, did you take a picture? Did you put it down? And I started asking all these questions. Then Ainsley asked the question. It's the prominent question. Where did you see it last? Where did you see it last? And I watched Briar standing in the forest, and she does this little mental look back. And she goes, the last I remember seeing it was in the car. And then Ainsley said, well, then it's probably there. Don't worry about it. Well, we began to walk, and we were assured that everything was fine because it would be in the car. I had to just confirm this, so I opened up my Find My Phone app. Sure enough, her phone's in our car. But she just had to look back when she had something lost. And it reminded me that when I'm going through life and I feel lost, I simply need to look back and allow God to take the anxiety away. I simply need to look back and just remember what I know to be true. The last thing I know. I know that he's in control of my life. Look back. Look back. I want you to stand for a moment. This morning you came in here and you were given a rock. It's not big enough to create a memorial. But I'm sure some of your spouses won't let you put this beside your bed if it was any bigger. But this rock represents one of the things that God's done in your past. It represents one of the things that he's spoken to you. It represents one of the journeys he's led you on. I want you to hold that rock for a second. Just close your eyes, just for a moment. I want you just to go back. Just look back, because friends, by looking back, you can propel yourself forward. I want you to look back and say, what has God promised me? How has God led me? What has He done? And I want you to hold that rock and put that rock in association with some of those memories, some of those words, some of those journeys. He's been faithful. Just for a second, remember, fix your eyes backwards. Standing in the Jordan River today, and you don't know how to get forward, I'd encourage you to look back. I'd encourage you to look back to how God's led you, to totally depend on Him. I'd encourage you to look back to the things He said, both the commands, the codes of conduct, and the communication of character. And I'd encourage you to look back at the memorials and hold the rock so dear and say, this is what God has already done. This is what God has already done. I read this quote this week. Throw it on the screen. It says, when we think that God has forgotten us, then the truth is, you've forgotten Him. Because the God that we know is not a God who forgets. The God that we really know is not a God who forgets us. Hold your rock and allow Him to lead you forward. But church, as we conclude this service, look backwards so that you might go forwards. Fix your eyes on the rear view mirror and see what God has already done. Jesus, as we leave this place and we are stepping into our future, I pray that your hand would be upon us. You would help us. You would help us to look backwards. You would help us to look at the way you've led us. You'll help us to look back to the things that you've said. And you'll help us to look back to the things that you've done. And as we hold onto our rocks and remember the God we serve, allow us to step into the places you have for us. We love you. Be with our congregation, we pray. In Jesus' name, amen. Bless you, everyone.